saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes, great for any project. Whether you're pouring a walkway, a concrete slab, or setting a post, view our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. We are presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Get thicker grass, better color, and fewer bare spots with turf application. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So, Joe, we've discussed Cornell Tate. We went earlier in the show through some of the receivers that have been taken first in recent drafts, be that Marvin Harrison Jr. or Jackson Smith and Jigba or Tet McMillan most recently before Cornell Tate, and kind of established some of those expectations. We'll get back into that a little bit later this hour. But obviously they took Tate at 4. They passed on Arvell Reese at 5. They did not get the opportunity to draft Jeremiah Love, who went at number 3 to Arizona. But Reese is not the only guy that the Titans were in position to take at number 4. And obviously, they, you know, later in the draft, they trade back into the first round. They trade back into the second round. So clearly, they liked those guys. But whether it's Sonny Styles and where he went, some other guys you want to throw out there, maybe, I mean, I've people today on the text line says they should have gone Tyson instead of Cornell Tate. So, Joe, when it comes down to what the Titans chose to do in this draft, specifically at number 4 with Tate, and some of the players that we're going to be watching and comparing and monitoring closely moving forward, who are some guys, maybe beyond Arvell Reese, the obvious, who really stand out to you there?
Yeah, Reese, of course. We'll sit there and we'll track him. You know, Sonny Styles. I mean, to me, it's I guess you could, if you want to be a Titans fan and Jeremiah Love's a 2,000-yard rusher as a rookie, you could, you know, shed a tear, but like it wasn't an option for them. I mean, we can't sit here and say trading up was an option for them from 4 to get him, to get a running back. Wow, imagine that. So to me, it's just anyone you could have taken instead. Was it realistic for a Jordan Tyson to go where they took Tate?
His injury history would have scared the crap out of me.
You know, Mekhi Lemon is a guy I came up with too. I think if one of them goes nuts, you know, again, you always have the redrafts. I mean, there's probably going to be somebody in this draft who went low first round or went third round, and then in 3 years, like, well, if on the redraft, that's a top 5 pick. But that's a little different than this. I mean, I think Styles, though, is definitely interesting. You know, again, does Styles become this great player? Because there was talk of that. Oh, yeah. I would have not liked it. I wanted them to take Reese, but I think Styles is still somebody that you're going to, you know, that you're gonna look at. I think the interesting one with this is Faulk, because there was just a huge number of edge players ranked really close to each other, and these are all guys who went after him, TJ, and not far after him. So, first of all, you can play the game of, did the Titans need to trade up to get him?
TJ Parker went at 35, which was their pick to Buffalo.
So, right, so TJ Parker, then you go R. Mason Thomas. Then you go Cassius Howell. By the way, I called him Cassius Winston last week. Parker called me out on that. Good call there. My bad. Derek Moore, Zion Young. To me, that's the group. There were other guys who went not too far after that, but like that's the group of popularly discussed late first, early second edges. That it was a total run on them. They all went in that range. So is Faulk going to be the best of those? Because he was drafted to be the best of those.
Correct.
He was drafted with a move up saying he is the best of these guys. That's a lot of guys. Like that's a lot of possibilities of someone who could outplay him. And you know, people may want to talk about scheme fits and things like that. Some of these players are very different from each other. You know, I'm a big believer that, you know, the scheme fits a thing, but too much is made of it. And when it comes down to it, you know, if you have a player good enough to be a first or second round pick, your scheme better allow for that player to flourish within your scheme.
Well, and frankly, if they're good enough to be a first round pick, your scheme, the scheme at some point, not totally irrelevant, but you ought to be able to play in most schemes if you're a first round pick.
Yes. Yeah, first, second. So that's just a huge number of guys. Now, I would also say with that, you could, if you wanted to, you could look at, you know, other things. They had taken the receiver, so that's off the table. But, well, what about, what about a Colton Hood? I mean, they didn't take a corner at all. Would it have been a bit shocking for the Titans to, like, take a corner with their 35th? Yeah, well, I think we all would have been a little bit shocked. But I'm just saying, there's an example of someone who that is a position, you know, technically of need. You could look at Jacob Rodriguez from Texas Tech at linebacker.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, we know that they went with Anthony Hill not long after that, but there's a guy who is going to be very interested to see what he does. I love that. I mean, I think he's a great player. But I think mostly, you know, you're talking about these. You could, again, another corner. You know, you got corners in Avion Terrell and, you know, D'Angelo Pods, things like Pons, not Pods, things like that. But, you know, I think it's the edges that you're going to be – you know, you're going to be very closely compared to, for sure. And then, you know, you get to why am I losing my place here? You get to Hill, of course. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could have gone. Like, does Jake Slaughter, which is a very rich pick
for
a center. Right? Someone earlier on the text line today is telling me that Pat Coogan was the best offensive lineman in the whole draft. If that's true, my God, Titans have hit an absolute home run. But Pat Coogan has some limitations. And, again, look around. The Diego Pavia discussion, which is just popping still. My God, is it popping. It comes down to there are certain benchmarks that you have to hit, right, to be – a significant prospect in this league, and Coogan doesn't hit some of them. Slaughter hits them, and the Titans really need – if the Titans' interior offensive line is a disaster this year and he goes to the Chargers and Harbster and just is awesome, then it's like, oh, there you go. The Chargers have their 10-year starting center. I mean, that's someone that I'm going to look at, you know, as a comparison, as someone to follow and compare it to the Hill pick.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, somebody's asking on the Falk pick about, you know, how much does – Sonny put this out there. How much does the fifth-year option play into trading up for Falk?
Yeah.
It plays into it. But, again, I think, Joe, that highlights even more what you're saying is they thought so much of him that they moved back into the first round, were worried about picking up the fifth-year option, which signifies that they think that he is, I would assume, significantly better – than an R. Mason Thomas or a T.J. Parker or a Cassius Howell, which they could have gotten at pick number 35.
Yeah, so here's what I'd say, Sonny, and I mean, it's a good point for sure, and it matters, and teams like to have that option. I'd also say this. Well, a lot of times the fifth-year option is taken because you're kind of iffy on a player, right? What you hope is that he's so good that you're going to give an extension anyway, right? Like, if you're moving up for a guy, yeah, you have the fifth-year option, but if he's as good as they hope, they're going to give him an extension anyway and screw the fifth-year option, right?
Yep.
Or they could. And it definitely happens.
I was thinking about that in particular with the Falk pick and the fifth-year option and just his next contract. This whole talk about how he fits the Saleh system perfectly, and I understand why, and that's a good, you know, reason to pick him, I suppose, but – you know, what happens if Saleh's not the coach?
Yeah.
What does that do to the pick?
Well, that's even more reason.
Well, these guys are fired and they don't care.
If he puts up, you know, like if he puts up numbers in the Saleh system, but it doesn't necessarily translate to wins, then make a coaching change. What does that do for your outlook of the player?
Again, I agree. I go back to what Robbie just said, which is like, Can you get upfield and get off blocks and sack a quarterback? I mean, scheme matters.
It will translate, you think, possibly to the next coach.
Better, yeah. Right? I mean, there's a coaching malfunction if it doesn't.
If you're like putting up a bunch of numbers and a system that fits you perfectly and you change it, what does that do to your value?
Yeah.
So,
it's a fair question.
Selecting for the coaching staff. I don't know. Did Borgonzi talk about that a lot last year? I feel like this year in particular, they drafted a lot, especially on defense, for the fit of the defense. Oh, he fits so-and-so. You know, Falk fits it perfectly with the rotation. Hill fits it perfectly with the hit it quick with the linebackers and the speed and all this kind of stuff. And I like that, but long-term, you know, does that pigeonhole you as far as your overall ceiling of a player?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I go back all the time with that stuff, though. It's like good coaches see what he does and says, okay, your system can't be so rigid that, you know. There are some players that are definitely specialists and really, again, it's like some teams that are way more zone than man or vice versa. There's different types of corners and things like that. But I think especially like, and you know, wide zone schemes, the athleticism of offensive linemen versus more gap stuff, whatever. I feel like front seven players, like, can you get upfield with power and speed and get off blocks and read stuff? You know what I mean? Like, if you're a good coach, you should be able to figure that out. But that's a fair question. The bottom line is I would want Borgonzi or my GM to be, well, collaborating with my coach and getting players that they can envision in what they like to do, right? You gotta play for now. You gotta live for today.
I kind of like the idea of Borgonzi walking in and be like, Robert, you sit down. I'm going to make the picks. You sit down, and I'll let you know who we got.
You will play with whoever you get, Robert, and then you will like it.
I already got you a quarterback. That's all you need to be worried about is the quarterback.
We haven't done Borgonzi voice in a while.
It's maybe my favorite.
615-737-1025,
our phone number. A lot more of your thoughts to get to on the Titans. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. We were heavily invested to figure out who's on this ESPN show.
It's Andrew Hawkins.
There you go. Okay.
He's been on there before.
Yeah. I just saw him. I was like, I don't know who that is. We figured it out.
Yes. Good job.
Figured it out.
We're big investigators here.
We are.
Just like our friend Inspector Clouseau.
Yeah. They shared a playlist several years ago. That's a big deal. Playlist.
Sorry. Some
of course,
people
wouldn't know because that was on Spotify and you're a big Apple Music guy.
That's a very good point. Some people must listen to this show and be like, why does that guy every once in a while just like say loud stuff in stupid voices?
No, we did our
no sense at all.
We did our Borgonzi voice, and of course, you know, people start pulling in requests for PK. Like that, you know, part of the beauty of the PK voiceover that we do, it's got to be natural, right? Like it's just got to come natural.
You can't go on demand. It's just got to you got to feel it. You got to feel
and
that.
And frankly, it comes
Edith
up enough
Bunker
anyway.
Flowing where, through your veins. Yeah.
It'll happen.
He's coming in tomorrow, so you got to do some in his face. You know?
That's true.
Makes it that much better.
That is true. One texter says, this is from Lorne, says, "Falk's fit should fit most defenses because it's not the speed edge, it's more of the power edge." In Salah's system. Look, here's my question for Keldrick Falk. Whether it's speed, power, combination of the two, can you get to the quarterback and bring him to the ground? That's my scheme fit for you. Can you do that?
Can you beat a single blocker? Do you have a variety of pass rush moves? Do you have, you know, you can get 4-3, 3-4. Okay, so, you know, your 4-3, what, wide nine edge or whatever? Okay, well, in a 3-4, that's your rushing linebacker, and you're bringing four. You hope to get four a pass rush with four people, you know. And if you have people you can move around, as the Titans used to have, like Danico Autry is one of those guys that to me, he's a you know you could move him all around. He fits any scheme. I mean that's what you're looking for. Coaches have systems, and that's great. And coaches who are rigid in their systems as opposed to coaches who get creative and figure things out for players who are really talented that can beat blocks and can and can go ahead and get a quarterback, those are the better coaches.
So you went through some players that the Titans fans will be keeping their eye on when it comes to, you know, obviously the Arvell Reese part of this. Of, hey, what's he going to do with the Giants? Is he going to turn in some all-pro pass rusher? What about Bane? Because Bane didn't go until pick 15. So it's not like, you know, that anybody else was knocking on the door of taking Reuben Bane at number four. But we talked about Reuben Bane a lot throughout the draft process. And I think if he didn't have the short arm stuff, I mean, he probably would have gone
real
top
high.
Six.
Yeah.
Right?
He's like a whole league follow. Yeah. It's a big deal.
Once he got past the top 10 or 11, I was like, so how far is he going to fall? And he did fall that far. I mean, he went 15 to Tampa Bay, so it's not like it was some huge slide. But he will be, as I'm identifying guys in the first round as it relates to the Titans. I mean, obviously, like I'm interested to see what David Bailey does in New York. Obviously, Jeremiah Love, Arvell Reese. I mean, not that far down the list is going to be Bane. Like, what does he do in Tampa Bay this year? Like, is he some, you know, right out of the gate, really important player for that defense, or does he struggle right out of the gate?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's probably the most interesting of all the draftees in terms of the historical data was pretty compelling, and it wasn't like a small sample size. But if he blows that up and he plays on the edge and he's a big-time sacker, the quarterback, first of all, that he's still an outlier, but it's a nice bucking of history and a demonstration of folks. Sometimes you just have to look at what a guy does.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, then it's like, look, you just have to have certain things. It's an interesting
case study.
It is an interesting case study. And also with him, it's like I watch him on draft night and he's like, he looks like the Terminator. He's got his shades on. Like his whole family's all dressed up in the same suit, and he's just absolutely joyless, just a monster walking. Like, I don't know if I'm going to bet against this dude, man. he might get like 20 sacks this year. I mean, he is. He's a different dude. And I think probably like in a good way in the NFL.
Well, I saw the video of him getting drafted, and they mic'd him up. You know, they release all these phone call videos with – guys who get drafted on their teams. And it was him with Todd Bowles. It's like the quietest conversation in history. Like neither one of them are speaking any louder than this. Bane's crying, and Todd Bowles like, yeah, I can't wait to get you here, buddy. It's going to be nice to see you up there in Tampa Bay. It's like, I can't hear a word that's going on out here. Is anybody excited about this?
So Bane was crying?
Oh, yeah.
Take back everything I just said.
He composed himself by the time he got up here.
I will come crush everyone. Goodbye.
Yeah.
You know? That's my image of Bane. Well, I was born in it.
That's why I was gonna say. Why it's your image of Bane?
You could have a lot of you could have a lot of marketing fun if you're the Bucks. This guy, right?
Yeah.
Like you got to do it.
I had some people asking about what about the offensive linemen. So you had Maui Noah go at 10 to the Giants. You had Fano go at 9 to the Browns. So how much are we watching them? Particularly if the Mandor loses some hinges this year and Latham struggles, how much are we paying attention to offensive line, which back in February you advocated for them to draft at number 4 overall?
Well, I mean, not exactly, but yeah. No, I mean, look, there's a ton of first-round offensive linemen. I've kind of bypassed that because, you know, like I just don't think any of those guys were worthy of, you know, going where the Titans were picking. Now, again, a lot of people say that about Carnell Tate, too. A lot of people did say that about Carnell Tate. So I guess you could look at it that way.
What about Pat Coogan?
But your first guy is – he probably should have been a first-round pick. But your first guy is Fano at 9. I think where you look at tackles – you got Fano, Maui Noah, not Goa. You got Caden Proctor, Blake Miller, Monroe Freeling, Max I, who I will never try to pronounce his name, Caleb Lomu. Okay, so you got a bunch of guys. To me, I guess you could look at the Falk situation and say at that point you could have addressed left tackle if you thought the guy was good enough. So, okay, does anyone starting at the end of the first round really turn into a great player? Because really the run on tackles was over in the first round. So when's the next tackle, offensive tackle, who went? Like, they all went in the first round. There were no offensive tackles taken in the second round.
68th overall was Markell Bell, tackle to Philadelphia,
okay,
in the third round.
So, okay, so maybe you look at him, and if he turns out to be great, he went to the Eagles, so he probably will, you know, then.
But even that's, I mean, he's a third rounder.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Because he wasn't, it's not like he plummeted or anything like that.
No.
That's where he was projected. So, yeah, I guess you could go, you know, where you went to get Falk, if you're doing this exercise, and you wanted to look at Caleb Lomu from the other Utah guy, you know, what a ridiculous offensive line they had, and say, okay, well, you went and got Falk at the end of the first round, but you should have gotten him. That's a first-round tackle. Now you address left tackle. I guess you could go that route. But I hadn't really thought of it in those terms. To me, it's like, if you moved down, and I said this before, if you moved down, or you know, if you happen to evaluate it differently, but move down and then maybe one of those guys like a Fano is there. Okay, now you can talk about it, right? But they didn't.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Carnell Tate drafted at number 4. We took a look at receivers in recent drafts who were taken as the first receiver in those drafts. What are the expectations based on the production that we've seen from those guys? We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Carnell Tate drafted at 4 for the Titans. Joey, we went through the exercise earlier in the show of receivers in recent drafts who were the first receivers taken in those drafts. So, for example, we made the executive decision. We're discounting Travis Hunter because he was a receiver and a corner. And now he's not playing receiver anymore. He's playing corner. So we're going to go with Tet McMillan.
Yeah, Tet's the way to go.
As last year's first pick. So Tet McMillan, Marvin Harrison Jr. was taken 4th overall the year before that. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, now that was an outlier because he was the first receiver in the draft and he didn't go until 20th overall in that draft, which is kind of amazing to think about.
That year was, what year was that?
I believe that was that 2022? 2020, no, excuse me, that was 2023.
That was 23, okay.
Yeah.
I just want to see how many teams like right now are kicking themselves for not taking him higher because, boy, is he good.
He's pretty good. Drake London was in 2022. He was the first receiver taken in that draft, 8th overall. And then, of course, in 2021, Ja'Marr Chase was taken 5th overall. Yeah, it's worked out pretty well on that front. So there are, you know, obviously differing levels of success for these guys. Ja'Marr Chase, clearly the best example with what he's done. I mean, his first year, he had 81 catches for almost 1,500 yards and 13 touchdowns. Yeah. I was like, oh, well, this guy's on the very short list.
He's different.
Of the best receivers in the league. But, you know, there's Drake London, who was 8th overall. I would say good numbers his first couple of years. I think his first year was 72 catches, 866 yards, 4 touchdowns. He was right around 900 yards his second year. And then his third year, he went 100 catches for almost 1,300 yards and 9 touchdowns. Smith-Njigba was fine his first year. He had 63 catches for 628 yards. And then he blew up his second year, 100 catches, 1,130 yards. And then last year, I mean, he's best offensive player in the league.
What? Give me the numbers last year.
It was 119 catches, 1,793 yards, and 10 touchdowns.
Yeah, unbelievable player, and took him some time to get there. You know, you look at those rookie year numbers, that's just a high, pretty high volume and like a 10 yards a catch, you know, right? Something like that type of player. That's kind of what you thought he was, which is why he goes 20th in the draft. And it's like, okay, like a good slot guy, and he's going to be, and now look at him.
Yeah.
And he went 20th.
Good. Tet McMillan last year, 70 catches as a rookie for 1,014 yards, 7 touchdowns. Pretty good rookie season for Tet McMillan a year ago. And then I would say Marvin Harrison Jr., who was also drafted 4th overall and went to Ohio State, is the one so far where you look at it and it's like, yeah, need to see more. He had 41 catches at 608 yards, 4 touchdowns as a rookie. And then this past year, or excuse me, that was this past year, his rookie year, he had 885 yards on 8 catches or and 8 touchdowns. So it's not gone well for Marvin Harrison. He only played in 12 games this past year, so you'd have to keep that in mind. But he's really the one that has not lived up to the billing to this point.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I think something in the range of – and I threw out earlier, you know, A.J. Brown was a second-round pick. If, as a Titans comparison, he had just got over 1,000 yards, but only 52 catches, 20 a catch with 8 touchdowns. Big play guy, yard after the catch guy. You know, breaking tackles guy, which isn't really doesn't really compare to tape, but you know, to me, it's like something in that range of, you know, 60 catches, 700 yards, 6 touchdowns type of a season. I think would be overall a fine number. Of course, you'd love to see him have a 1,000-yard season. I think what you want to see is you expect ups and downs. You expect some inconsistency, not just from him, but just from the team overall. You'd like to see some games where he's just a dude out there getting you a bunch of catches, getting you 7-8 catches, more than 100 yards, a touchdown or two, and it's like, okay, that's what you're looking for. You can't expect it every week. I mean, no one does that every week. Even Ja'Marr Chase doesn't do that every week. I mean, his numbers cumulatively, if he did that every week, would be much bigger. But a few weeks like that with him, right? And also, I think you'd like to see late season difference between that and earliest season with him.
Well, I think one thing that stands out to me about this, and again, you know, people are talking about quarterback situation and all that's fine.
Sure.
There's a lot of things that you factor into it. But one thing pretty quickly here, like Ja'Marr Chase immediately one of the top receivers in the league. Drake London took a little longer, but by his third year, he's catching 100 balls for 1,300 yards and 9 touchdowns. I mean, Jackson Smith and Jigba by his second year is catching 100 balls for 1,130 yards. You know, Tet McMillan in his first year caught 70 balls for 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. I mean, other than Harrison, the story is these guys that are the first receivers drafted recently figured out quick in their career. And it doesn't have to be, you know, 85 catches for 1,200 yards this year for Carnell Tate. But pretty quickly in the next couple of years, I think he's going to show you if he's got it or not, right? Yeah. Like, that's kind of what stands out to me is – We shouldn't be waiting into year 4 to figure out if he's worthy of the number 4 pick or not.
Right. Like, obviously, Smith and Jigba takes this huge jump. And you could look at it, certainly. I'm sure a lot of Seahawks fans do and say, well, Geno to Sam Darnold. You know, maybe that's part of it. But, yeah, like year 2.
He made just as big of a jump the year before that, though, and he had Geno Smith as the quarterback.
From year 1 to year 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's – year 2, certainly, with Tate. I mean, you have to be a 1,000-yard receiver and, you know, hopefully hovering around 10 touchdowns. I mean, I think that he should be big in the red zone. I mean, most of his touchdowns were, you know, like he had a huge yards per catch on the touchdowns last year. And, you know, that's – you also get into all that stuff with him in Ohio State. It's like that is where, again, it does matter. If Jeremiah Smith's over there, you're probably going to have a few opportunities downfield that you can take advantage of because of how much a defense rolls things to an incredible talent on the other side. But regardless, he obviously is a route runner. He can make big plays, and I think he's a 50-50 guy with great catch radius, big hands, catches everything. So he should be a red zone weapon.
Well, and by the way, like people keep bringing up quarterback situation. Like I don't know that I would describe any of these quarterback situations – other than Burrow to Chase and then this past year with what Darnold did in Seattle, like none of the quarterback situations are great.
Not spectacular.
Like Bryce Young he's okay.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty good year for Tet McMillan. You know, the quarterback situation in Arizona has not been very good at all with Marvin Harrison.
Atlanta.
You know, Jackson Smith and Jigba prior to the Sam Chise getting there. Yeah, Geno Smith, which he's okay. But Atlanta, you know, the latter part of Kirk Cousins' career, and then he shifted to Michael Penix. Like it's not been a very good quarterback situation. So people keep talking about, well, you can't judge it because it's based on the quarterback. It's really not. Like if you go look at the numbers, it's really not based on the quarterback. Yeah. These receivers break through kind of regardless of who their quarterback is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's examples of someone who would have been great, could have been great. You know, the quarterback play reduce the numbers, but for the most part, if you're that guy, like, you know, they're going to find a way to get you the ball in this league. So I think people can overplay that a little bit. Indy Ben says, I don't think you can simply compare Tate to other wide receivers drafted the first receiver. They're different prospects. Each draft class is different. For example, he's not the prospect Neighbors and Chase are. Well, that's fine, Indy Ben, but I appreciate you weighing in. Also, Indy Ben, I'd like you to know that in that draft where he went 20th, the Colts took Anthony Richardson. I'm sorry, Indy Ben. It's good to hear
from
you.
Well, I mean, again, I hear what he's saying there, but we have the same exact conversation with quarterbacks all the time of,
right.
Well, we compare – you don't think Cam Ward's going to be compared to all these number one picks that went at quarterback?
He's going to be in that long list.
He's a different prospect. He's a different draft class, all those things. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, during his draft year, as we talked about, he's not – in like the year before, he would have been, what, QB6 or whatever people were saying. But still, he will go down in the list of here's all the number one quarterbacks. Here's how they all did, right? That's what he is.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with these receivers. And again, like other than Jackson Smith and Jigba, you're all talking about top 10 picks. Like, you know, Harrison's at 4, Tate's at 4. You know, London's at 8, Chase is at 5. For the most part, you're talking top 10 picks here.
By the way, I know Peter Skronsky's good, but what if the Titans took Jackson Smith and Jigba?
Yeah, I would rather have some Jackson Smith.
I think there was some talk about that. Was there not?
Was? Yes.
Yeah, that might have been good.
Yeah.
But hey, another Ohio State receiver. Let's see if it can have a similar – I mean, they almost all work out.
They do.
Lately, almost.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot more of your thoughts to get to on our text line. We will do that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Joe, they just flashed the breaking news up on ESPN that John Harbaugh said that Odell Beckham Jr. looked good in a workout.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I would argue Odell Beckham hasn't looked good on a football field in, I don't know,
8 years?
2018? He had 2019. So, let's see here.
He was good for the
Rams.
7 years? He was good for the Rams in that Super Bowl year, right? Hurt him.
He had 300 yards.
He came up. Was he a trading deadline? He had some big moments late with them, right? Okay. I think that's true. Then he tore his ACL again.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Well, it's like, you know. So, Coach Harbaugh, how do you like? Yeah, he didn't look very good.
I can't. Wait.
Yeah, he's just.
We told him to retire.
He's pretty slow, but nice to talk to him. Let's see. Chip from Mount Juliet. He's certain that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to, with a new QB, new system, he'll thrive. I'd love to see it. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, you say what you want about Kyler Murray, who Vikings fans are all excited about, but, like, he can throw a football.
You know? Yeah, I mean, look, Marvin Harrison Jr. has clearly not been what they thought he was going to be. Now, maybe he turns into that at some point. Some of that, I'm sure, is probably on the quarterback/coaching situation. Some of that may just be he's not as good as they thought he was. I mean, we'll find out. But I don't know if we're going to find out this year because they got a brand-new coaching staff. Their quarterback situation is still Jacoby Brissett throwing the ball out there.
So get Carson. They'll be clamoring for Carson Beck before long.
Maybe so.
You can count on that.
Well, that'll fix it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, open mind, man. I'm wrong a lot. And by the way, I apologize to Dan Fouts earlier when we were talking about the greatest quarterback of all time for not mentioning him. Someone mentioned that to me. I'm like, you know what? I totally blew it.
That's true. One texter says, don't care how good your receiver is, it's hard for any quarterback to get the ball to him when the quarterback is running for his life. That is true for the most part. I would go back to Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. It wasn't very hard to get him the ball.
That's true.
And Joe Burrow's running for his life.
Joe Burrow's running for his life and having his ACL torn and almost – and all kinds of stuff like that. But I understand also. Like we can all take of all the receivers we've been talking about, take Ja'Marr Chase and put him to the side. He's his own guy. But what you don't want. Is it fair to expect Cam Ward to Carnell Tate to be Joe Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase? No. But if it ends up being an okay quarterback throwing to a good receiver, that's what that is. As we'll go back and say, so you drafted. For need, you drafted for need 1 and 4. instead of drafting the best possible or having the best possible scenario like trading down last year, and you screwed yourself. So it has to be better than that. It has to be one of the best pass catch combos in the NFL.
Yeah,
it has to be.
Well, by the way, we shouldn't shy away from that. Like that's you drafted a quarterback number one overall, and a receiver number four overall. Like that should be embraced by everyone, Titans included. Like that's what your expectation is. Not very deep into the Ward-Tate combo of their careers. They need to be one of the most prolific quarterback-receiver combos in the league. And it doesn't mean the Titans have to be, you know, knocking on the doorstep of a Super Bowl by the third year. But based on where you drafted them, that's what they should be in the not-too-distant future.
This reminds me of a possible research project. Or it doesn't remind me. It gives me an idea for a possible research project. We talked earlier about some of the other pass catch combos in the NFL.
Yep.
And you know, in some cases, maybe the receiver was first or whatever. I'm curious to know what would be the biggest bust of a combo of like a receiver and quarterback, maybe drafted within, even if it's not back to back years, maybe within like 3 years of each other. You know.
Yeah.
Does anyone come to mind?
I mean.
Because sometimes, like the Jets, like Garrett Wilson, you know, you could, I don't know, how far was he after Zach?
Not that far.
But there's an example of one of them is great.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, both just turning out to be meh. I'm sure there's an example. I'll have to look back. If anybody has an idea.
There's one franchise in particular that's coming to mind, and that would be the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
I'm thinking maybe like
who's their top Quinn drafted receiver?
Edwards. Like when was Brady Quinn drafted? He was drafted. Like
14. Oh, Brady Quinn, Braylon Edwards. You're going back now.
Yeah. So Braylon Edwards was number one pick for Cleveland in 2005, and Brady Quinn was in the first round in 2007.
That's a fantastic example. Yeah. Going back 20 years, but yeah, there you go. We can always count on the Browns.
Yeah.
If we're looking for a bad example of something, we can always count on the Browns.
I mean, heck, the Browns, when did they draft Baker? So they drafted Baker in 2018. This one's not – I mean, I guess it's somewhat close. I mean, Corey Coleman was drafted as their first-round pick in 2016, wide receiver. And did he do anything in the NFL?
Very
not much. Yeah, those Baylor receivers during that stretch were rough.
That is a system – you know, that's part of why the system stuff is brought up, right, with these guys. Jake Lyman's in there.
No, you could count on the Browns.
I think Jake Lyman just said profanity.
He was making fun of Kendall Wright.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jake. I just slandered you.
That would be an interesting research project, though.
That would be. Would that not be? Real quick, Texter here says, receivers don't have to be a clear number one. He's just got to make the catches when the play counts and help the team win. I'm going to argue with you on that.
When you draft somebody at number four, they need to be a clear number one.
Like if the number four pick in a draft is not your clear number one receiver in short order, you
missed.
Missed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, like it's – yes, a good player who helps the team win is great, but again, if that's the case, you can find that elsewhere. So then you do something else with that pick.
Yeah, right? let's not get it twisted.
Puzzle
like, very quickly into this, and it doesn't have to be game one. A couple years in, we need to know. Like Cardale Tate needs to be your number one receiver, and it needs to be pretty obvious. Like, that's what this exercise has kind of shown me.
Blake Bortles and Justin Blackmon, West from Murfreesboro. Ugh. Nice, buddy. I knew we'd come up with some examples.
That's gonna do it for us today on the program. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Gover says Akili Smith and Peter Warwick. Wow.